This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. I'm Jason Kong here alongside Mary Lucas representing Transitions Life Care. Mary, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I spent the weekend. I'm trying a new garden strategy this year. Sorry, Jason, you're not going to get any tomatoes or cucumbers, although I failed you on that last year too.
You're forgiven.
I have decided that crops like that take too much energy for one tomato, so I'm going the blueberry route. I planted a bunch of blueberry bushes.
Blueberries, okay. This is a strategy I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
Is it easier, more work?
I feel like it's easier because they're bushes and they're just bushes and they exist, and I don't have to, like, you know, with tomatoes here in North Carolina, you water them every day or else they're dying. And so I feel like I'll stress less about the bushes that are in my backyard. So
all right,
I'll come with a bunch of blueberries this year.
I'm looking forward to a bramble of some sort, maybe a cobbler.
Exactly.
Everyone stay tuned.
Exactly.
Well, we've got a wonderful show lined up for today. We're going to be talking all about volunteering and its many forms, and we thought we would start with the old home team here, and
woo-hoo.
We're gonna have a conversation with a friend of the show, Leah Rosen. Leah is the volunteer services team leader at Transitions Life Care. Leah, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Mary, for having me.
So excited that you're here. First, Leah, I want to introduce you. It's been a while since you've been on the show, but tell us a little bit about yourself, your role at Transitions, and how long you've been there.
Sure. So I am a clinical social worker. I have been working in healthcare and hospitals for most of my career. I completed my postgraduate studies in palliative care and end-of-life research and practice, and I have always worked in this space for as long as I can remember. I started at Transitions Life Care about almost 9 years ago as a palliative care social worker on our inpatient palliative care team. And then I made the transition to volunteer services in March of 2021, and I have not looked back since. Volunteering has just been, working with volunteers and seeing them volunteer in hospice has just been incredible. So that is so far my story at Transitions.
It's awesome. Many people don't know this, but having volunteers is actually a requirement for hospice organizations. Can you tell us a little bit more about what this means?
Absolutely. I think the easiest way to explain it is this. If you are a hospice organization that receives Medicare dollars for your services, you must have a volunteer program. And the question is why? I think, Medicare views the role of volunteers as hospice as an extremely important one. We know that volunteers help improve the quality of life of our patients. We know they ease the burden on caregivers when they're able. And we know that they provide conversation and companionship and support during an otherwise very difficult time. So Medicare ensures that volunteers are in place in a hospice program, and they even go so far as to require that our volunteer hours are greater than or equivalent to 5% or more of our total hours that our paid staff care for patients. And I just think that speaks volumes about how crucial volunteer support is and how crucial it can be for patients and their families. So we're really, really proud that Medicare stands behind the role of the volunteer in hospice care.
That's amazing. Can you talk to us a little bit about the different kinds of volunteers there are at Transitions and within a hospice organization?
Absolutely. The primary volunteer role at Transitions, we call that family support or family support volunteering. And under that big family support umbrella, we have volunteers who do so many different amazing things. We have volunteers who provide respite. That's relief for a caregiver, letting that caregiver take a break, go take a nap, get to the gym or the hairdresser, or just do some basic errands. We have volunteers who can provide companionship. That is interacting with a patient, engaging them in a conversation, a hobby, a task that they find enjoyable. We have volunteers who will provide light practical support in the home. Maybe that's running a load of dishes, folding laundry, tidying up. We have volunteers who provide transportation. They'll take a patient to grab, you know, something delicious at Starbucks. And maybe that's been a long time since that patient has been able to do something like that, or get a caregiver to the grocery store and help and assist with those errands. We have volunteers who provide supportive presence for those patients who might be less interactive. In addition to all of those things I just described, we also have specialty volunteers. Specialty volunteers bring a unique talent or hobby to the patients, to a patient and their family. You know, specialty volunteers can do things like provide Reiki, which is an energy movement modality. It can bring calmness and centering. We have massage therapy volunteers. We have pet therapy and music therapy volunteers. And I know we're going to talk about that in a bit, but it's just important to recognize how many wonderful specialty volunteers we also have in addition to the family support volunteers I mentioned. I don't want to forget to mention our veterans program. Veteran volunteers bring support to our patients who served in the armed forces by recognizing them, spending time in conversation, and really, you know, honoring that patient and their service to our country.
That is amazing. You're talking a lot about things that involve patient care. What if someone mm-hmm. is a little bit nervous about being directly involved with patients or communicating with patients, and someone still wants to help and give back, but just maybe isn't ready to be on the, quote, front line with a patient?
Sure, absolutely. And we're always happy to ease someone into that experience if they're interested. If not, we often will have volunteer opportunities at special events. We will have sometimes some administrative opportunities, whether that's within our grief center or education department or within volunteer services itself. We always welcome volunteers who want to lend a helping hand, even if that's not being with a patient or a family. We try to find those spaces and places where someone can give their time, energy, and effort.
That is amazing. So how does someone register to volunteer? What does the training look like for volunteering at Transitions Life Care, and how long does it typically take?
Sure. So, you know, the best place for someone to start if they're interested in volunteering at Transitions is to head to our website. And on our website, we have a devoted page to volunteering. And we, you know, make sure that it is very easy for someone to sign up for one of our monthly volunteer information sessions. We host those virtually on the first Wednesday evening of every single month. And that is a great place to hear all about Transitions Life Care, volunteering, and what we have to offer. If someone after that virtual session wants to move forward, we walk them through exactly what they do to what they need to do next to take next steps. Training is important. We do not underestimate the value of training when you are working with a patient and their family member. So we make sure that training is required, but that it is digestible, it's fun, educational, and interactive. Anyone who wants to work with patients and families should feel confident and competent, and demonstrate an understanding of some really important areas that volunteers may experience. And that might be related to boundaries, cultural humility, family dynamics, grief and loss, and other important topics that a hospice volunteer should feel good about. Mm-hmm. Training is a combination of studying at home, doing some homework, as I like to call it, and then coming to in-person training on our main campus. And that totals about 8 hours. But again, we make it very fun, digestible, and super interesting.
One more question for you. We get this a lot, and I know that you answer a lot of these questions for people that call in or are inquiring. Is there an opportunity for groups to volunteer?
Absolutely. The best way for groups to get involved at Transitions Life Care is often by hosting and serving a meal in our hospice home, or gathering as a group to provide something special to our patients and families, either in our hospice home or in our community. An example of this might be creating a comfort kit. Our patients and families, no matter where they are, really enjoy a small bag of comforting goodies and items. That might be a little bag of bottled water, a snack, cozy socks, something that makes someone feel supported, something that lets them know someone is thinking of them. And so that can be a wonderful way for a group to gather, to be together, and to be able to support Transitions Life Care in that way. It's a wonderful way to volunteer and be active.
So for something like providing a meal or making these bags, does the group still have to go through the full training, or can they just reach out to the transitions team to register for something like that?
Absolutely. The best way is just to reach out to Transitions Life Care Volunteering, and we will walk you through how to donate a meal, how to prep and serve a meal in our hospice home, or how to donate comfort kits or other goodies. You do not have to go through training to do any of that. We welcome all kinds of different types of support, and we will absolutely make it as easy as possible for groups to be able to do that seamlessly.
Leah, thank you so much for giving us an overview of the volunteer process. And if folks are interested, you can go to transitionslifecare.org. On the main menu there, there's a section that says volunteer. Click on that. There's plenty of information there, information on how to become a volunteer. This is such a critical part to Transitions Life Care. Leah Rosen, volunteer services team leader at Transitions. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Jason, for having me. I'm honored. Have a great, great day. Thanks again.
You as well, Leah. We're going to take a quick break. We've got more on volunteering. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters. Care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Jason Kong, here with Mary Lucas. We're continuing our look at volunteering, and we're now going to focus through the musical lens, which is very exciting. We're very pleased to have on the show Allison Ankoviak. She is the musical presence volunteer at Transitions Life Care. Allison, thanks so much for coming on the show.
You're so very welcome.
I had the pleasure of meeting Allison while I was also volunteering at Transitions at our hospice home, and I was so excited to hear from her and her interest in coming on the show and talking about what she does. So Allison, maybe start off by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you started volunteering at Transitions.
Yes, Mary, I was always interested in music, obviously, from a very, very early age. Mm-hmm. And then I heard about this thing called music therapy, where I could help other people and provide music. And I said, this is the profession for me. After my schooling at East Carolina for music therapy, I then went on to a clinical internship in hospice and palliative care. And from then, I used music therapy to help a lot of different types of people. And then it seemed that hospice and palliative care was the place for me. And so I began volunteering at, it was Hospice of Wake County. And then a huge break occurred. Then I came back to Transitions Life Care. And it's just been so fulfilling. I have learned so much. So I'm so thankful to everyone who has helped me accomplish that.
Tell us a little bit about what music therapists do and what other settings they may work in outside of something like a hospice home at Transitions.
Yes, music therapists use music to help people to be an ally in their life, whether they're a caregiver or the person receiving care themselves, you know, receiving treatment. And we are able to play live music either on piano or guitar, and also obviously voice, we're there with that. And one of the greatest things I like to see is relief or a positive change in a way that makes whatever people are going through easier for them. Music therapists can work in schools. We can work in hospital settings. There are music therapists in prisons, mental health settings. So many different types of places. You might find us also in music academies, providing one-on-ones. Also, we serve developmental disabilities, groups, and individuals as well.
That is wonderful. Talk to us a little bit about some of the people or groups that can benefit from something like music therapy.
Goodness, I think that the coverage area is pretty wide. Mm-hmm. It really, really is. And my main goal is to give them music and see how they're impacted and see what progress I can make for them. We were just at the Kids Zone Music Workshop last week, with Transitions Kids. Mm-hmm. And I was able to see music therapy bring these children together to connect and bond. Mm-hmm. And they were all there because they were grieving in different ways. So just, immediately we were able to see them connect.
That is amazing. What is a day in the life? So you come into Transitions, I'll use Transitions as the example, but you come into the hospice home. What does a day in the life of a music therapist usually look like for you?
One of the things that I like to do as soon as I enter the hospice home is I, of course, say hello to whoever is there when I come in the door. And whether it's like you, Mary, with Waylon, or if it's someone at the front desk, another volunteer. After I do that, I look to see if our candle is lit so that I know immediately what a possible range of emotions might be when I enter the hospice home. And I think about those providing care as families or health care. And so I sort of try to orient myself to that feeling that they might be experiencing and all they've done to go through caring for the person who is close to dying or has died. And then I, of course, talked to Heather, our volunteer coordinator there, and she provides me with a paper and lets me know more about the patients and families that are there. And so I try to kind of orient myself to the needs that might be present. She gives me some information, and then I set a plan for my time there. I decide what music I'm going to provide there at the piano, and then I make a plan to go back into the nest area, the common area of the hospice home, to play guitar and to sing there to provide comfort and peace and hopefully some relief. And then I take a little break and speak with the nurses and find out, who of these folks do they think could best benefit from the presence of music today? And quite often, after I get that list, I find that, yes, the person who is the patient can be my primary focus. But when I go in those rooms, I see much more than one patient. It's mm-hmm. It's a whole unit of people who need relief and need to release some of the emotions that have been there. And I try to see as many people as I can and make documentation as a musical presence volunteer. Did I answer the question? I feel like
absolutely.
I said a lot there.
No. Absolutely. That was perfect. I want to touch on this before we go. Without sharing, obviously, HIPAA information, names or information about patients, is there any particular experience that you had that you would like to share that really showed the true benefits? I'm sure you have many of these, but any true benefits of music therapy?
Yeah, Yes. There was a gentleman and his family was there with him visiting, and they brought their guitars in when they were there to visit their loved one. And I love it when the people visiting just open up to me and just tell me everything I need to know. That's one of the best parts of being there and one of the best ways to make music very important for the family and the patient. And they told me that they brought their guitars because the father taught them how to play guitar. And they shared a little bit about him and how music was important to him and kind of what kind of person he was and like what kind of music he liked. And he was, I forgot to say this, he was unresponsive at the time. And I was able to play sort of like, I would call it a personality timeline of his music. And I played and sang several pieces, and one of them I played was Good Hearted Woman. I believe that's Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson. Hopefully I got that right. But his wonderful family was there, you know, the whole time. And I think I might have actually heard some chuckles and laughter during that. But that was like the second piece I played. And then I played one kind of quieter piece. I believe it was Pieces Flowing Like a River. So beautiful. And the last piece I played was Jamaica Farewell. And during that, that man took his final breaths. And it was just like the whole room was sort of captivated. Mm-hmm. Yet all at the same time, it was relaxed. And it was like a huge sigh, you know, just in the room. But the warmth in that room was something to certainly be observed and embraced.
Mm-hmm. That is really remarkable, and boy, you have us in tears over here, Jason. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
That is one of those moments, I'm sure, that was very moving for everybody. And Allison, we just really appreciate everything that you do for Transitions, our patients and families. You really make a huge difference.
Oh, it's so wonderful for me to be able to share in those, you know, intimate, very intimate and last moments, whether the person is responsive or they're just talking up a storm. It's so great. So thank you so much for letting me share today. And I think I'm so thankful for the volunteer program.
Allison, thank you so much for your time and for being so open with us. We really do appreciate it. Allison Ankoviak, she's the Musical Presence Volunteer at Transitions Life Care. Again, you can find information about volunteering at Transitions Life Care online at transitionslifecare.org, transitionslifecare.org. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas. Mary, I know we're going to pivot to a discussion on therapy pets, and I want to thank Allison and Koviak for coming on with us mm-hmm. and sharing, boy, a powerful story that there was a well-timed break for us. I'll say that.
That's right. That is right. You know, I met Allison at the hospice home, like I mentioned in the last segment. I was with my therapy dog, Waylon, and we were taking a little break in the nest area is what they call it. And what Allison mentioned, it's kind of like the central area for gathering and kind of a common area in the hospice home. And we were sitting there and just resting for a minute. And it was actually Waylon's birthday, which I celebrate dog birthdays, obviously. and Allison came into the lobby and she was petting Waylon. And I was like, it's Waylon's birthday, because I'm also a humble bragger about my dogs. And she was like, let me sing him a birthday song. And so Waylon was taking a little break from therapy for a minute, and Allison sat down with her guitar and sang the most beautiful song about being a therapy dog and celebrating his birthday. I was crying. Allison's voice is just so calming, and her presence is just, it really filled the space in a beautiful way. And Waylon just nodded off, and he fell asleep standing up. His eyes just started shutting, and it was exactly what I was thinking when she was talking just a few minutes ago. I was thinking, this is exactly music therapy in one way. Sometimes it can be very relaxing, and Waylon just completely nodded off, and I was like, well, wait, we have to get back to your duties now. Wake up. But it was beautiful, and I really appreciate everything that Allison does. She's a wonderful volunteer for us, and her work is just really beautiful. And I've seen the benefits and experienced them firsthand with therapy, or with my therapy dog, Waylon. But I also want to talk a little bit about therapy dogs.
I want to jump in here because a while back, it's been a few months, we brought up the subject of therapy pets. And it's one of those things where, like, I don't know. I felt like we did that segment, and then I started seeing
therapy dogs,
therapy stuff everywhere. I was like, "Oh, it's just maybe it's just called," and now my brain recognizes it. But it was odd, and I know this is a big passion of yours and something that there's a big need for, but also maybe something that requires a little bit more vigilance on our end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I rescued Waylon. He is a Bernedoodle, a Bernese Mountain Dog Poodle, and I rescued him over a year and a half. It's actually going almost on, working on 2 years now, a year and a half ago. And he came from a really bad neglect situation. So shout out to rescue dogs. You can rescue doodles. You can rescue purebred dogs. You can just consider rescuing before you buy a dog, because Waylon came from a backyard breeder who was very neglectful. Waylon was very, very sick. He was malnourished. He had many types of internal diseases and issues. He had terrible anxiety. So I ended up fostering him for a bit through Freedom Ride Rescue, which is a wonderful organization that I volunteer with. And all of a sudden, Waylon turned the corner and was just the calmest, sweetest, well-mannered dog. And I had always been looking for a therapy dog because I really wanted to do work at the hospice home and in hospitals. And I immediately was like, Waylon could do it. So we started training. Sandy Schiller is a wonderful local tester for Alliance of Therapy Dogs. And Sandy actually also volunteered at our hospice home and volunteers in the community, all over the community, at assisted livings, and has wonderful therapy dogs herself. And she's a huge resource for our community and the therapy dog community. But she gave us some pointers when we were training. We did things like spend every single day at Lowe's Home Improvement, the one off of over off Glenwood Avenue in North Raleigh. I'm sure that they would recognize us if we went in there now. And Home Goods allows your dogs. So we really got out a lot and worked on our training for many months. And then Sandy tested us, and the testing process is pretty vigorous, but not too intimidating. So don't be alarmed. But he can't, you know, be licking people or can't be reactive to any other dogs. You have to ignore the other dogs. You can't be approaching other dogs. If you see some in public, you can't be afraid of wheelchairs or people who are unsteady on their feet or loud noises, and you can't have reactions like that. So it took a lot of training, banging pots around my house and, you know, taking shopping carts and trying to run them into him and see how he'd flinch or react. And we passed the test, which was great. It's a few parts of a test, and we met with Sandy a few times. And we are officially registered with the Alliance of Therapy Dogs, which is a wonderful organization. They're a national organization, and they are accepted at most of the hospitals around here, assisted living, transitions, life care, the hospice home. And so we make visits to all over the place now, which has been a lot of fun and something that has given us a lot of fulfillment and joy. And it's always great to walk in. And, I mean, who doesn't love a dog?
Exactly. I mean, this is like the perfect marriage of two worlds for you.
It is with
pet therapy. I want to talk about, you know, my experience seeing this out there more often, and you know, the process that you just described for Waylon is pretty intense, pretty rigorous. But it sounds like, you know, a few years ago, I noticed that, you know, more people were buying those vests for their dogs they can just bring them on the plane. But, you know, it's not just for the pet. It's for the people, this training. So can you talk about the standards for pet therapy and why it's really important not just to, you know, randomly show up with your dog somewhere and say that this is a therapy pet?
Absolutely. You can buy a vest on Amazon that says therapy dog. You can buy a vest that says service dog. You can buy certificates for this stuff. The hospitals and transitions and your healthcare facilities and most places that are looking for a therapy dog will only take a registration from certain organizations. And there's many reasons for that. Number one, the amount of training that we go through. You want to make sure that you're picking an organization that also has insurance. If something were to happen, if someone fell on the dog, or if the dog causes someone to fall, or, you know, there could be a million things that can happen, Alliance of Therapy Dog has insurance for all of its therapy dogs. So if you're registered with Alliance, you're covered under their insurance. And that's really big for our hospital partners and assisted livings. They want to make sure that you're insured. They also do a lot of regulatory things. So you have to register your visits, making sure that you're doing a certain number of visits every 6 months to make sure you're continuing your registration and continuing your work and your therapy work, because, you know, it's a skill that you can also lose. I can tell when Waylon hasn't done something or done an event in a little bit, because it takes him a minute to get back into the hang of things. We go out, and just like you said, Jason, we go out, and if he has his vest on and we've gone to a visit or something and we go somewhere afterwards, I typically take it off of him, because people don't, you know, Waylon is in work mode when I put his vest on, and he knows that. It's interesting how much his demeanor changes when we go to the hospice home. He turns into a different dog, and it's also, you can see his whole mind shift of like, okay, I'm here to work. I'm here to be here for other people. I'm not here for myself, and like, I'm here to do my job. But people stop us in public and say, oh, service dog, I can't pet that dog. And I'm like, no, different. Service dog is a dog that is trained for something like, you know, recognizing seizures or blood sugar levels. Those are very specifically professionally trained dogs that are there for a healthcare reason. Those cannot be pet. They are working dogs. Therapy dogs are meant to provide love for other people. So if you see a therapy dog tag on a dog, it is meant for love, and please pet him. Service dogs are very different. But also, don't just put a vest on your dog, please, because it does bring down some of the efficacy of the work that we do and the training that we put in. And we just want to, you know, keep it all in the line and do it the right way. So,
well, that's a great PSA out there for everyone. You know, make sure you're doing the right thing. And if you are interested in, you know, you have a dog that you think would make a good therapy pet, be sure to pursue that and make sure you're going through the proper avenues of accreditation there. A quick break and back with more. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas, of course, representing Transitions Life Care, and we're going to be talking about communication tips and focusing on advocating for respite. Mm-hmm. And Mary, this is something that is so, so important, and we say this all the time, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's also very, very hard for people to do because, you know, anyone who's been involved in any part of a caregiving journey knows the stress that is put on the caregiver, and mm-hmm. a lot of times it's just so hard to take a step back when you are focused on the person who needs care. Mm-hmm. You need some care as well, and you need respite mm-hmm. in order to be at your best.
Respite is rest, and you have to be strong yourself to be able to care for others. And without that, you'll get run down and it can be very hard on you. But it's such a hard conversation to have. It's something that's not easy. I was talking to my dad about it actually yesterday. I was over at his house and we were talking about my grandfather and the importance of taking a break. And he's just started a rotation with my aunt and they trade off weekends on doing the groceries. And I think that alone has been monumental in providing him a little bit of respite. But beyond that, I think I also had a conversation with a friend who's a caregiver and she's really struggling with this as well. And so I wanted to talk about it on the show about communication and advocating for yourself. You need a break. And that conversation's not always easy for the person that you're taking care of as well. And I think there's a lot of guilt. And people feel guilty taking a break, but you have to think inward first, and your feelings and what you're feeling and the exhaustion and it is valid, and it is not a selfish thing to do. And I think a lot of people feel selfish taking a break when they're taking care of somebody else, and that's a hard feeling to take on. So there are some tips that I wanted to provide, and I've done some research on this and talking with my dad and others, and wanted to share them with you all as well. But first, prepare your conversation with intention. Why do you want respite? Is it you time? Is it you need to take a rest? Your work is busy as well, or you may have children. You know, the sandwich generation of caregivers is growing pretty rapidly, and you may need to go to more soccer games or whatever it may be. Do you need to hire extra help? That's something that's really important in a conversation that was really valuable for my dad and talking to my grandfather about either assisted living or we need to hire a nurse to help out. So those are very tough conversations, but it's good to prepare for those in advance with intention. Research your options first. Find out what's practical. If private duty is something that you're taking on, look at cost and something. And schedules and things like that. And how will we benefit from you taking a break is an important part of the conversation. We will all benefit from you taking a break and being able to share why. And pre-planning will really help guide that conversation. And I think it's something that's really important. I know Jason and I were just talking about even pre-planning for the show. It's hard to have conversations sometimes. So it's always important to pre-plan. Second, label your feelings. Put your feelings into words. Write them down. Read them. See them. Understand them. I take time to journal every night, and it's something I didn't do before, but writing down my feelings and going back and looking at them is something that has really helped me validate how I feel every day. And it helps me advocate for myself in other situations. So label your feelings, put them into words, read them, go back and read them. If you've had a hard day, go back and read a couple of days prior when it was good and realize that it always isn't that way. So putting out your feelings and seeing them and understanding them will help you advocate for yourself. Then pick a time to talk. Don't do it when everyone is alert and in the height of something, or, you know, right before you're doing an important caregiving task. Make sure that everyone is calm and rational. No one's overwhelmed. We're not right, you know, going to bed where everyone's a little bit drowsy. Make sure that everyone's awake. So make sure you pick the right time. You don't want to be hangry. You don't want your loved one to be hangry. I know that's not, I can't be hangry and have a good conversation. So just pick the right time to talk and really think about it and plan it out. And following positive communication is always key. Refer to your feelings that you wrote down, why you're feeling this way. Use I statements to share how you feel instead of you statements that place blame on your loved one. You is a hard thing for someone to hear. Instead of saying, I feel this way, I am tired, and I need a break, I need to take a nap, whatever it may be. Speak very soothingly. Listen actively, and listening is a key part of this conversation, and hear the feedback that you're getting from your loved one. Take pauses. A lot of the times, if you're dealing with someone that may have a little bit of cognitive decline, that's something that's very important, to take pauses and listen and really get the active feedback. Then you want to share positive outcomes. Like I said earlier, what will benefit for this time to yourself? What will benefit your loved one for you taking this time? What will they gain? You'll be in a better mood, or I can cook better dinner if you give me a little more time to go grocery shopping. Or, you know, there's a lot of benefits of you taking rest and being more fully available when you are there, if you're not as tired or you're not as stressed, or, you know, all of these things kind of combine into one. And it's important that you take rest for yourself and take this respite care. And then finally, create a care plan. You know, if it involves, like I said with my grandfather, there was nursing aides that we have. If it's working with an adult day facility, there's some great adult daycares and day facilities around that provide care during the day and activities during the day. You can drop them off and pick them up. There are a lot of great options around us in this area. And if you're on hospice, like Leah said and earlier in the show, it's part of the hospice benefit. So you can talk to your social worker and set up the right volunteer for you. If it's you need someone to come into your house and just give you a break while you do grocery shopping, you can meet with your hospice social worker and discuss all the things that you need, and they'll be able to put someone in place to help you get a little bit of respite. They also have a respite stay where you can take your loved one to a facility and have a longer stay respite as well as part of the hospice benefit. It's all provided as part of the benefit. So if you have a vacation that you need to go on and get away for a few days, that's a great option if you're on hospice. Also, if you're on palliative care, you can talk to your team there and they can help you find the right fit as well. But respite is so important. And I think that people don't realize it until they're too tired and they are too worn down. And it is very heavy. And you don't want to feel that way and get to that point. So taking these breaks earlier and being able to have these conversations and communicating and advocating for yourself as a caregiver is so important. And you should not take on the guilt of this. And put those feelings down into words, validate them, advocate for yourself, and really get the rest you need as a caregiver.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And it's especially something to focus on early on in a caregiving journey, because I think just naturally, we have a lot of energy at that point. And also, you know, when you're speaking with family members and they're asking how you and your loved one are, your natural response is going to be, hey, we're doing okay. You know, we're getting by. We're getting through this. We're still learning. And you may be kind of conditioning your mind to think, well, you know, we got this. Everything's okay. But as you said, you don't want to reach that point where you're overwhelmed and it's become too late.
Right.
And then everyone's going to be looking at you like, well, hey, what's going on here? You know, you've been telling us everything's okay, and now that's not the case. So maybe set those expectations that, hey, you know, I'm okay now, but maybe in a few weeks I may need some help.
That's a great point. You know, that kind of happened in our situation with my grandfather. My grandmother died, and we were all all right there, you know. And I think this happens with many others as well. When someone passes and their spouse is still here, everyone surrounds them, and everybody was around, and everybody was helping. The grandkids were visiting, you know, cousins, family members from out of state. Everyone was there and helping. And it's also happens at holidays. You see it quite often around holidays when caregivers are there's a lot of people around, and Christmas is going on, or Hanukkah, whatever it may be. You know, everyone is there, and then it's a couple months later when you start to feel this, and not everyone is there anymore, and it's down to the main caregivers, and then that's when this is so important. And I think that it can go for a while before you realize how important it is. So just think about these things and advocate for yourself and have those conversations so you can have respite as well.
Yeah, these are wonderful tips. And I think there's even some application outside of advocating for yourself for respite. There's probably a lot of applications for a variety of relationships. Those are wonderful tips. So again, if you missed any part of this segment, you can go online to WPTF.com, click on the podcast button. From there, find Aging Matters, and you can go back and listen to this episode. Maybe you want to share this segment with someone who's in a caregiving situation. So that's a wonderful opportunity for you. WPTF.com, click on the podcast button and find Aging Matters there. We're taking a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.